بر محمد و آل محمد صلوات.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى أهل بيته الأطيبين الأنجبين، بهم نتولى ومن أعدائهم نتبرأ إلى الله. اللهم كن لوليك الحجة ابن الحسن صلواتك عليه وعلى آبائه في هذه الساعة وفي كل ساعة، وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا، حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا وتمتعه فيها طويلا. رسول اللہ صلی اللہ علیہ وآلہ وسلم فرماتے ہیں، حضرت زہرا سے خطاب کرتے ہوئے، یا فاطمہ کل عین باکیہ یوم القیامہ الا عین بکت علی مصاب الحسین. فرماتے ہیں کہ اے فاطمہ، قیامت کے دن ہر آنکھ روئے گی الا وہ آنکھ جو حسین پر، حسین کے مصائب پر روتی تھی. فَإِنَّهَا ضَاحِكَةٌ مُسْتَبْشِرَةٌ بِنَعِيمِ الْجَنَّةِ، کہ وہ آنکھ جو حسین پر روتی تھی اس دنیا میں، جنت میں وہ تمام نعمتوں سے متنعم ہوگی اور وہاں پر وہ خوش ہوگی. خود ذکر حسین، مصائب حسین، یا یاد ابا عبداللہ الحسین علیکم السلام، یاد ابا عبداللہ الحسین ایک بہت بڑی نعمت ہے جو ہم کو خدا نے دی ہے، اور جو کچھ بھی ہمارے پاس ہے ابا عبداللہ الحسین ہی کی بدولت سے ہے. یا یہ جو کہتے ہیں کہ محرم اور سفر سے اگر اسلام باقی ہے، یہ حقیقت ہے. یہ یعنی جو کچھ بھی ہمارے پاس، جو کچھ بھی خوبیاں ہیں، جو کچھ بھی ویلیوز ہیں، جو کچھ بھی میرٹس موجود ہیں، سب ابا عبداللہ الحسین ہی کی بدولت. ہمارے چھٹے امام صادق علیہ الصلاۃ والسلام، کیا درس ہوا کرتا تھا جس میں زرارہ، جو کہ ان کے صحابی ہیں اور جن سے بہت سی ہماری احادیث نقل ہوئی ہیں، وہ بھی شرکت کیا کرتے تھے. ایک دن زرارہ ایک درس میں غائب رہے. پھر دوسرے دن امام نے پوچھا ان سے، البتہ امام کے پاس جو ہے علم امامت موجود ہے، پوچھنے کی بھی ضرورت نہیں تھی، لیکن ہدف یہ تھا کہ پیغام، میسج ہم تک پہنچے. اب امام نے سوال کیا کہ زرارہ، کل کے درس میں تم غائب کیوں تھے؟ تو جواب نہیں دیا انہوں نے. دو تین دفعہ جب سوال کیا، پھر جواب دیتے ہیں کہ امام، حقیقت میں یہ ہے کہ میں نے کچھ لوگوں کو جو ہے اپنے گھر پر بلایا تھا. ہر معاشرے میں، ہر کمیونٹی میں کچھ لوگ ہوتے ہیں جو کہ مصائب ابا عبداللہ حسین پر بہت اچھا روتے ہیں. کہتے ہیں زرارہ کہ میں نے ان لوگوں کو بلایا تھا، دو چار جو موجود تھے اپنی کمیونٹی میں، اور برنامہ یہ تھا کہ میں، ہم میں سے ہر کوئی مصائب پڑھتا تھا اور ہم بیٹھ کے روتے تھے. اور پھر امام فرماتے ہیں کہ مجھے معلوم ہے کہ میں وہاں پر تھا، اس مجلس میں، اس چھوٹی سی مجلس میں جو کہ زرارہ کے گھر پر منعقد ہوئی تھی. پھر زرارہ کہتے ہیں کہ مجھے لگا، مجھے احساس ہوا کہ دروازے پر جو ہے، دروازے کے پاس کوئی بیٹھا ہوا ہے جہاں پر جوتیاں چپل چھوڑتے ہیں. اور پھر فرماتے ہیں زرارہ کہ امام، اگر آپ آئے میرے گھر پر، دروازے کے پاس تک آئے، تو اندر کیوں نہیں آئے؟ کہتے ہیں، فرماتے ہیں کہ امام، میں کس طرح اندر آتا جبکہ میری ماں حضرت زہرہ سلام اللہ علیہا بھی وہاں پر اس مجلس میں موجود تھی. تو مجلس جو کہ ابا عبداللہ الحسین کے لیے برپا ہوتی ہے، اب ضروری نہیں کہ اس میں لاکھوں کا مجمع ہو، سینکڑوں کا مجمع ہو. فرماتے ہیں کہ پڑھنے والا ایک ہو اور سننے والا بھی ایک ہو، تیسرے ہم اہل بیت ہیں. اور پھر ایک کتاب ہے جو کہ جس کا ترجمہ اردو میں موجود ہے، توحید کی حقیقت، شیخ رجب علی خیاط کے، اس میں سوان حیات لکھی ہوئی ہے. وہاں پر شیخ رجب علی خیاط کہتے ہیں کہ ایک دفعہ خواب میں میں نے رسول اللہ کو دیکھا اور ان سے یہ سوال کیا کہ میں امام کی خدمت میں پہنچنا چاہتا ہوں، امام سے ملاقات کرنا چاہتا ہوں، امام زمانہ سے کیا کروں؟ رسول اللہ نے جواب دیا کہ دن میں دو مرتبہ تم حسین پر رو، ابا عبداللہ حسین پر دن میں دو مرتبہ گریا کرو. اور اگر آپ دیکھیں زیارت ناحیت المقدسہ جو ہمارے پاس موجود ہے، جس میں مصائب ابا عبداللہ حسین کو خود ہمارے امام عصر نے بیان کیے ہیں، وہاں پر اس زیارت میں فرماتے ہیں کہ لَأَنْدُبَنَّ لَكَ صَبَاحًا وَمَسَاءً، کہ میں آپ پر جو ہوں دن میں دو مرتبہ روتا ہوں، صباحاً ومساءً، صبح شام روتا ہوں. اور روتا ہوں صرف آنسو نہیں بہاتا بلکہ آنسوؤں کے بدلے میں خون روتا ہوں. کہ یہ خود کلام امام عصر ہے. تو شیخ رجب علی خیاط کہتے ہیں کہ میں نے شروع کیا دن میں دو مرتبہ گریا کرنا ابا عبداللہ حسین پر، اور ایک سال تک رویا میں ہر روز دو مرتبہ، اور ایک سال کے بعد وہ فری ایکسس مجھے مل گیا امام زمانہ کے ساتھ ملاقات کرنے کا. تو گریا، عزا، رونا ابا عبداللہ حسین کے لیے، یہ سب ہمارے ہی لیے ایک ایسٹ ہے، ایک بہت بڑی نعمت ہے جو کہ خداوند متعال نے ہمیں دی ہے. اور یہی ہم چاہیں گے خدا سے کہ اس نعمت کو، ان توفیقات کو جو کہ اس نے ہمیں دیا ہے اس دنیا میں، کبھی بھی ہم سے واپس نہ لے، نہ چھینے. اور اسی محبت اہل بیت اور اسی عزائے حسینی کی ذکر کرنے کے لیے اور بھی توفیقات دیتا رہے کہ سالیان سال ہم اسی فرش عزا پر امام کا ذکر اور یاد کرتے رہیں. The topic that has been selected for these few nights, it's the attitude of servitude, or a person when he wants to get acquainted with the akhlaq of the Almighty God, what does he do? That is, if he possesses an attitude when he submits wholly and solely to Allah in every affair, in every walk of life, that is the best. Now, to understand, it's quite an interesting topic. And if we look into Quran and in the history or even in our own time, you find that there have been people who were counted among the best at some time during their life, who were noble, who were good, who were pious. But at a different zone, at a different time during their life, they twisted and they changed. Those who were so good at one time, they didn't remain that good and the end of the in the last days of their life, or even during the middle stages of their life. Now, we have seen many people throughout our life that there have been people who were really good, and then they changed and they turned back to their heels. And now, when they changed and they became bad, it wasn't as such that they were amazed. They themselves never believed that they would ever turn and they would change their position. So neither did others ever believe that they would become such bad people, or they themselves also, they had never that assumption or that faith they will change the position which they possessed. For example, among the people that can be mentioned is Zubair. In the presence of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam, Amir al-Mu'mineen was also present there. Zubair was also present. Now, this is the advent of Islam, in the early days of Islam. Zubair, he is the first cousin of Rasulullah, first cousin of Amir al-Mu'mineen, and he is the son of the aunt of Rasulullah. There, he has performed miraculous tasks, miraculous deeds during his lifetime in the early days that, for example, in one of these battles, Battle of Khandaq, the sacrifice which Zubayr gave, no one else could do that. His age is 16 years, and Rasulullah wanted someone to spy on the enemies, to get the information from the enemy's side. No one could do it. Zubair accepted and he did that task. At the young age of 16, he does that great miraculous task. And again, if you look into the seerah of Ibn Hisham, he says that once the Prophet, he says, now this is the word and the phrase said by Rasulullah, says that every Prophet had his disciples, had his Hawariyin, لِكُلِّ نَبِيٍّ Hawari, وَحَوَارِيِّ زُبَيْرِ ibn Awam, that every Prophet had disciples of his, and among my disciples is Zubair. So a loud word given and spoken by Rasulullah with reference to Zubair. So long as Rasulullah was alive, Zubair was present, and after the Prophet also, Zubair was with Amir al-Mu'mineen, so much so that when the house of Amir al-Mu'mineen and Hazrat Zahra alayhim as-salam was burnt down, was attacked, Zubair and everyone was outside the house. There was this great congregation. It was only Zubair who stepped forward, who took his sword out, and he says that, Ya ma'ashara bani Hashim, ayuf'alu hadha bi'ali wa antum ahya, that all people of Bani Hashim, should Ali be treated in this way, should his house be attacked that way, and you are yet alive, addressing to Bani Hashim, he says. So he has that strong support to Amir al-Mu'mineen. And at that time what happens is someone hits a stone to Zubair. Zubair is knocked down. They come and tie him up, take the sword away from him. Now with such beautiful past, during the time of Rasulullah, such beautiful past, even during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Now Rasulullah and Amir al-Mu'mineen were sitting in that majlis, and it's the early days of Islam. Rasulullah says to Zubair, do you like Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali? He says, I love him, and I can't separate from him. Rasulullah says that a time will come when you will stand against him. He says, will I do that? Then Rasulullah did not continue. He didn't say anything after that. And it so happens that Rasulullah passes away, and then Zubair becomes one of the entrepreneurs, one of the richest billionaires of Medina. So much so that if you look into this kitab, this book, Al-Ghadir, written by marhum Allama Amini, he says that he was listed among the fourth richest men of the Arabian Peninsula, of the Arab world. 11 palaces have been listed for him, and his riches and wealth in billions. And so much so that for centuries after Zubair, his palaces were a tourist spot for people to come and visit. So someone who has gained all that wealth through all these different loots and looting, plunders, etc., etc. And it so happens that in the Battle of Jamal, Amir al-Mu'mineen is there. Zubair is in the opposition at this time. And then Amir al-Mu'mineen, he wants to have a little chat with Zubair. Comes forward, and then Aisha, she raised a call saying that Zubair is killed. Now when Amir al-Mu'mineen, he hadn't worn that armor, he hadn't prepared for the war, wasn't prepared for the battle, and he just wanted to have a chat with Zubair. And then he says to Zubair, Zubair, do you remember 25 years ago, Rasulullah had said that, do you like Ali, do you love Ali? And you said, yes, he is my buddy, I will never stand against him, I will be with him. He said, I just wanted to remind you of that, what Rasulullah said, and he said that one day you will stand against him. When he was reminded of this saying of Rasulullah, he just is ashamed and he goes away, he walks away. His son, his men come and start taunting him that, are you scared now? And it so happens that he was killed by his own men. So someone who had such a beautiful past, how he ends up? What was the reason for that twisting? What was the reason for that moving away? Now we have to be careful that this blessing of Iman that we have today, God forbid it is taken away from us. Like every blessing, like the blessing of Iman, like life, like health, like wealth, like children, fame, beauty, etc., etc., whatever we have today, the next moment it can just fade away, can be seized away, can be taken away from us. It's not guaranteed to stay with us. The same thing is with Iman. Now, this Iman, for that to stay with us, we have to be careful, we have to do something that it stays with us until the last moment. And it is as such that when the person is giving away his life, Shaitan, he comes and attacks, and he wants to take this person away from the track that he was, the path that he was throughout his life. What is that? Iman. And he wants to take away that Iman from the person. So something has to be done that these beautiful pasts or the performance that an individual possesses that stays with him until the last moment of his life. So, the good and the bad that we do throughout our lives, it could be categorized into four stages. Sometimes people do good in a bad way. Sometimes people do good, really good, that you are amazed of their performance. Sometimes people, they do bad, they do sin, just a regular sin. But sometimes sins are done in a detesting way, that a person, he just feels sick of how this evil was performed by this individual. For example, good done in a regular way, we know that. For example, there is a good task, a person wants to help someone out, he helps. But sometimes you find that people, they want to help someone out, but in a bad way. That is, they do the good job, but there is a lot of favors on it, that it was me who helped you, it was me who provided that to you, it was me who found that job for you, it was me. So something good, but it has been contaminated with all those favors that have been topped up onto that good thing. So that is something bad. A good task done and performed in a bad way. Sometimes good is done in a benevolent way that you won't believe how it is done. For example, during the time of Abu Abdullah and Hussein, a person comes to Medina and says that who is the Kareem, the most dignified, the most benevolent person in town? A faqir comes, a beggar, he's in need. People give him the address of the house of Abu Abdullah and Hussein. That is the person who is the most dignified, the most kareem in town. And now, this faqir, he comes and recites this shi'r, this poem, by the house of Abu Abdullah and Hussein, says, "Anta kareem, anta jawadun, wa anta mu'tamadun, abuka qad kana qatilul fasaqa." That you are Jawad means you are someone who gives a lot. Wa anta mu'damadun, and upon you people depend, rely. And your father was someone who killed all these fasaqa, all these evildoers, wrongdoers. And then Imam understood that he is in need, he's a beggar. He comes to the house and says to his household, there is someone at the door, and this is the time to help. If you want to give charity, if you want to give sadaqah, now is the good time. He comes, spread a little piece of cloth in the middle of the house and says, whatever you have, put in this cloth. He makes a little parcel out of it, everything that was present in the house, and comes by the door. And then, again, he addressed Imam as Anta Jawadun wa Anta Mu'tamadun. وَأَبُوكَ قَدْ كَانَ قَاتِلُ الْفَسَقَ. Imam in reply says to him, خُذْهَا. Now again, the beauty of Imam. He comes by the door. He doesn't open the door totally, nor does he himself come out. Just a little bit of the door was open, and he takes that parcel and his hand out of the door and gives that parcel to that faqir, saying that, خُذْهَا, take it. فَإِنِّي إِلَيْكَ مُعْتَذَرٌ, that I am sorry. وَعْلَمْ بِأَنِّي عَلَيْكَ ذُو شَفَقَةٍ, and know that I love you. Imam says that to the beggar. He takes it and starts crying. Imam says, why do you cry? Was that little? That was all we had over here in our house. He says, the reason for my cry is not what you have given me. What you have given me is much more than what I wanted and I was in need of. The reason why I cry is that these hands, so dignified, so benevolent, they must never be buried. Because of that karam, that dignity, that benevolence of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. And we wished that person was present to see what happened with Abu Abdullah on the day of Ashura. That he prays that those hands must never be buried, but how Imam Hussein was pounded on that day of Ashura. So, the reason why Imam doesn't open the door completely is that he doesn't want that faqir to look at the Imam and get a bit ashamed. That he knocked the door of the Imam, and then, well, no matter who the person is, a person who is in need, when he comes and extends his help and aid to another person, he is putting his dignity at stake in front of the person. Now, Imam is Kareem, the most dignified person, but still he doesn't want that faqir to be ashamed. He doesn't open the door completely, he doesn't look at that faqir, nor does he want him to see. It's only the hand of this Imam which comes out. And again, if you look into the seerah of Ma'sumin, the sixth Imam, a wealthy person, he loses his wealth in one of his journeys and comes to the Imam and says that whatever I possessed, I've lost. I don't have anything. For example, in those days, he had lost about 100,000 dirhams. Imam, in the presence of his companions, he says he gives 10 times more than what he was in need of. And then says a condition, and that is, you should not see me anywhere until the last moment of your life, no matter where you are, no matter where I am. We must again. And then, when he walks away with all that ataya, the gifts or the money that was given by the sixth Imam, the companions, they say that, what was this Imam? He was in need of, for example, 100,000 dirhams, you gave him 1,000,000. Why was that? And then secondly, you said to him not to see you again anywhere anymore. Imam says he was a dignified person. So if he had lost that much, if I give more, doesn't matter. And the reason why I said to him not to see me again, because if he sees me, he will be ashamed that it was a day that I extend help before the Imam. So Imam doesn't want that person to be ashamed even that little. So that is that karam, something good done in a benevolent way. Or for example, this good done in a beautiful way is among the ulama of the Shia world, it's Marhum Jafar Aghai Mujtahidi, who passes away in the past few decades. And it so happens that he frequents to the Kuh-e Khizr. There's a Mount Khizr in Qum, near Jamkaran. And it is said that Prophet Khizr was seen on that mountain, and people, they go there. Salawat. And people, they frequent to that mosque, to that mountain, as for ibadat, for worship, for servitude. Now this person, this alim, he visits that mosque, that mountain once in a while. And it so happens that he's there for 40 days. And when he's coming from the mount after those 40 days of worship at that point, the students, they are waiting for him. And they say that now that he's going to come back to Qum, let's ask him if we have questions. And he comes back. There's a tea that was prepared for him. And he wants to renew his wuzu, and he comes out to the courtyard of that house, performs his wuzu, takes his handkerchief out to dry himself, and he sees an ant in that handkerchief. And he says that I have to go back. Now that is 10 kilometers from where he was. And he had walked all the way here. He says, I have to go back to that mountain to put that ant back to where it belongs to. Because I moved it from where it belonged. Now the students say, you are an old person. He was an old man, 60, 70 years of age. Say that we'll do it for you. We'll drive you all the way. He says, no, I have to train myself. I have to educate myself that I don't make such mistakes anymore. Now, he relocated that little ant from where it belonged to. So he walks all the way back and puts that ant back onto that mountain. So a good done in a benevolent way, in a really good way. So, sometimes you find that people, they sin, they do bad in a regular bad way. For example, aliyazu billah, a sip of something which is najis, or a munch of a sandwich which is haram. A person eats it, he has committed a sin. But sometimes you find that bad is done in a horrible way, in a detesting way, in a way that a person feels sick. For example, on the day of Ashura, when everything was burnt down, and when those mala'een, they were looting, they were plundering the household of Rasulullah, everyone went forward, they took away, they stole away, they snatched whatever they could. And that mal'oon, he comes by the body of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein and he wants to take that ring out. And he couldn't take that ring out, he chops the finger. So that's something bad done in a very bad way. So people are of that nature, that sometimes they do good in a good way, bad in a bad way, good in a really bad way, or sometimes bad in a detesting way. Or you find people in the community that they are good when they are alone. Or when they are in a congregation, you find that they are really horrible. Or sometimes people, they are good when they are well off. When that wealth is taken away from them, they are bad. Or people are good when everything is fine. But in war, they are bad. Or vice versa, they are good in war, bad in peace. Good when they are alone. Or when they are ill, they change tone. So what should be done that in all these different circumstances, that when a person is ill, when a person is in a bad shape, when a person is poor, when you've got all these problems pouring down around you from every side, so what should be done that a person remains intact and in the same way throughout his life? Or for example, if you look into this Karbala, it's a whole lesson of ma'rifah. It may be just a one day, or it may be a 10 days from the day when Abu Abdullah arrives and when everything finishes on the day of Ashura. But it's a whole story, or it's an education for a journey of a lifetime. On the day of Ashura, there's a person called Zahak bin Abdullah Mashriqi. Now, he also comes with companions, with the caravan of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. And on that day of Ashura, when he sees that everyone has died and there aren't many left, he comes to Abu Abdullah and says that, Imam, I'm leaving. I'm going. Now, Imam, he is Kareem, he is benevolent. He says, now, how will you leave from all this thing that has unfolded over here? Now everything, it's a mess. There is no way for you to leave. He says, now, the example of someone who is good when there is a congregation, when there is a group with him. When he finds himself alone, he is bad. He says that, I find that there's no one here now. And definitely you will lose. Even if I live and if I die with you again, you lose. So I want to leave. Imam says, okay, if you want to leave, how will you leave? There is no way out. He says, when I came to Karbala, as a precaution, I had kept a horse in one of these tents, that if I find myself in danger, I could just evacuate and leave this place. So you have people who are good when they are in a crowd with others. When they find that they are alone, they are bad. Or vice versa, people, they are bad when they are alone and when they are with. So Imam says that, what should we do that we stay the same at all times? Is it fasts? Is it du'as? Is it services, servitudes that a person does throughout his life? Will that help? Now, salat, du'a, zakat, prayers, helping others, all these things are good. But they are like these small tributaries. What is that mainstream? What is that path that could help us be firm and stand firm until the last moment? What is that? That is submission. That a person has to submit what Allah has said to accept blindly. That is, if a person accepts what Allah has said blindly, then that can be guaranteed up to a very large percentage that he will be safe. But if we just stick to prayers and fasts and zakat and helping and all these mustahabbat without submission, it's of no use. It's of very little use. So that path or that mainstream that could find salvation to us or that could guarantee us a good end is that submission which we have to possess. And if you look into this whole the story of Shaitan, says that Allah asked Shaitan to bow down in sajda before Adam. Shaitan says, no, allow me not to bow down. And then he comes up with different excuses. He says to Allah, let me not bow down before Adam. I will worship a worshipping that no prophet ever worshipped you. No angel ever worshipped you. I'll do that duty and show you. Allah says that I want you to worship me as I tell you, not that as you wish. That is, submission was lacking. Shaitan, with all that worship, he became an abid, but he never became an abd. Abid is someone who worships. Abd is a slave, someone who has submitted. So Allah says that I want you to be an abd. That if we want to find salvation and that salvation be guaranteed, that is through ubudiyat, that is through servitude, that is by way of submission. And again, if you look into the sayings of the great ulama, for example, the example that was just mentioned, Sheikh Murtaza Zahid or Marhum Ayatullah al-Uzma Bahjat, they say that there is not a lot that is required. You don't want to do anything miraculous to get to those levels and ranks. It's all these basic things that are mentioned in Tawziul Masail. Whatever you have been told to do, do it. Whatever you have been told not to do, don't do it. Otherwise, Shaitan worshipped more than anyone. Amir al-Mu'mineen says that he worshipped for 6,000 years. And we don't know those 6,000 years which Shaitan worshipped were the years of this world or the years of the hereafter. Now, the years of the hereafter, every day in Akhirat, Quran says, Khamsina alfa sana. Every day is 50,000 years. Now, he worshipped for 6,000 years, multiplied by that, and that much worship he did, and after all that worship, again, he never became an abd. He was just an abid. An abid doesn't count at all. So, among the great personalities that again can be mentioned, it's Marhum Haja Warahim Arbab. He says that in my youth, I was walking with my ustad. And then in those days, they had these septic tanks at home. For the toilets, they all were collected. And when these wells got filled, they used to come and empty it. There were no pumps, there were no big cars. And says that once they were emptying one of these septic tanks and they were carrying the dirt out, and with all that smell, I just closed my nose. The student closes his nose. That what bad smell is this? And then the ustad says that if we knew the dirt inside us, if it ever exploded, what will happen? Now to understand this, Marhum Shaheed Mutahari, he says that during the time when he was studying in Qom, there was an alim in Isfahan, Shaykh Ayatullah Shaykh Ali Shirazi, and he gave the best dars in Nahj al-Balagha. They traveled all the way there. And then he writes, Shahid Mutahhari writes in his book that once the Ustad, he comes to give that lecture, to give the dars, and after Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, he starts crying loud. And then everyone is shocked that why is the Ustad, instead of continuing and starting the lecture today, he is crying so loud. After a while, he settles down and he says that he saw whatever was told to him and whatever is told to us regarding how a person gives away his life, how he arrives into his grave. He says that I saw myself dying. And whatever was told to us is truth, is haq, is right. And then he says that I died, and then the body was brought to my grave. And when the body was laid in the grave, I see a horrible black dog escorting, and that dog is with me. And I was scared that why is this dog with me? And then I sought refuge with Abu Abdullah al-Husayn. I told him, Imam, do something, help me. And by the mediation of Imam, that dog was sent away. And then says that he was a bit hot-tempered. As a result of him being hot-tempered, says that that dog that was to be that was accompanying him in his barzakh and his in his year after was the reflection or the presence or the form of that bad character which he possessed in this world was to remain with. Now, when I say hot-tempered, not hot-tempered like us, now hot-tempered on for those great and benevolent people. Now Allah, when He wants to test and when He wants to examine people, He wants to purify them in a way that that faintest and that smallest temper shouldn't exist in them. So says that for that little bit of a hot temper which he possessed, that dog was to accompany him. And says that the seerats or whatever we possess in this world, it's going to be that surat and that form in the hereafter. And we are told that once in a while, now all this is a lesson to myself first, we are said that once in a while we should look into our own performance report and into our own selves, that if we were to take a form in the hereafter, what form will we be in? What will be our form? What will be our reality? What will be our haqiqat? What will be that surat of ours in the hereafter? Because the good that is done takes a good form in the hereafter. The bad that is done, that gets into a bad form in the hereafter. And riwayat are amazing in this regard. Says that a person who during his lifetime memorized Quran, for example, and he forgot those surahs, those ayat that he had memorized during his lifetime, and in the hereafter, that after he dies, he finds that beautiful faces, beautiful existences, beautiful beings are present, and he knows them, he is familiar with them, but he can't relate who they are. And then he will be addressed that is that surah which you had recited and memorized in your youth, in your lifetime, and then you forgot. Had you not forgotten that surah, that beautiful form would have been your associate with you in this hereafter. So every good has a good form, every bad has a bad form. So if there are bad and if there are shortcomings, if there are wrongdoings, or if there are evil existences in us, that evil will get a bad form again in the hereafter and in our graves. So may Allah help us purify ourselves and get to the hereafter in a better way so that we have a better akhirah. So the attitude of servitude, that person possesses an attitude that he submits wholly and solely to Allah in every walk of life. And if that was the case, that he submits to everything, then it is guaranteed up to a certain extent that a person can be sure that iman of his will remain with him. Again, servitude, that is that perfect rizq, that is that perfect sustenance. So we can say that ibadat, the worship that a person does, it is good, but that is temporary. And servitude, that is submitting totally, wholly and solely to Allah, that is that perfect task that a person can do. Again, reporting from Shaykh Rajab Ali Khayyat, he once traveled to Kuh Bibi Shahar Banu in Tehran, and there he comes to and sees a person there, Sahib Karamat, and he says to him, "What have you got?" He picks up a little pebble, a little stone, and transforms that into a pear, cuts it into two pieces and says that, "Have one." And he eats the other half. And he says it took a long time for him, a lot of riyazat, a lot of hard work, until he gained that karamat from Allah. He says, "Okay, all this was done for the people. What have you got for Allah?" He says, then that person who possessed that karamat, he starts crying that all this long life, 70, 80 years, he worked so hard for all these little things, but for Allah, there wasn't anything. In this regard, if we see that beautiful poem of Amir al-Mu'mineen, he says that وَفَدْتُ عَلَى الْكَرِيمِ بِغَيْرِ زَادٍ, that I gave away my life without any possessions, without any belongings. Now, what are the belongings? Says that مِنَ الْحَسَنَاتِ وَقَلْبِ السَّلِيمِ, the belongings or that baggage that we need for this journey to the hereafter, it's two pieces of luggage. Says min al hasanat, one is hasanat, the good we do, wa qalb al salimi, and a sincere heart. And then says that wa hamlu zad aqbahu kulli shay'in idha kana al wafudu ala al karimi, and it is tough to travel to a journey to someone wherein the baggage required are these two pieces of luggage, which is a sincere heart and good deeds, and the two are lacking. So it is a tough journey ahead. In one of these ahadiths that we have, Prophet Isa, ala nabiyyina wa alayhi wa alayhi salatu wassalam, he addresses to his mother, Maryam alayhi salam. Now Maryam has passed away. Isa is alive. He says to his mother that, "Mother, do you want to return to this dunya, this world?" She says, "Yes. I want to come back so that I could fast on a hot day and I could worship throughout the nights." And then she says to his son, Isa, "It's a tough journey ahead. It's a difficult journey ahead. That is the journey to the hereafter. With submission, it becomes easier." That is, a person has to submit to whatever Allah says. Not that submit to a few things, submit before everything. When it comes to prayers, submit totally to prayers. Not that before we start praying, we doubt so much and we say the prayers in a way that repeat it over and over again. All those repetitions, all those shukuk, all those doubts, they are not required. He says prayers just once, just once. Wuzu once, just once. Not a repetition. So shaitan must not exist. Now, again, to this submission before Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, the best examples, the best applicables of this submission are Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. Says that in Ziyaratul Jami'ah, "Antumus siratul aqwam," that you are that strong path, you are that sincere path, you are that straight path to Allah. That if we want to get to Allah, the path is Ahlul Bayt. Or if you look into Quran, it says that وَلِلَّهِ الْأَسْمَاءُ الْحُسْنَى فَدْعُوهُ بِهَا, Allah has good names, call upon Allah with the good names which He possesses. Now what are the good names? Ma'asum says that نَحْنُ وَاللَّهِ الْأَسْمَاءِ الْحُسْنَى فِي الْقُرْآنِ, that we Ahlul Bayt are the good names. Or elsewhere Quran says that the wasila that has been mentioned in Quran, that if you want to get to Allah through that wasila. Imam says that wasila, that means to getting to Allah, are we Ahlul Bayt. So without Ahlul Bayt, it's impossible. We want an easy access to Allah. We want an easy access to submission. It is through Ahlul Bayt. And without them, it is not possible at all. If you again see the submission of Amirul Mu'mineen, that is amazing. Now when he, during his lifetime when he was alive, and the Prophet also was alive, Hazrat Zahra too, Jibreel comes and says that, Ya Rasulullah, I want you, Ali and Zahra, to be in the house, everyone else to leave. I have a message for you. Everyone else was sent out, the Prophet, Amir al-Mu'mineen, and Hazrat Zahra alayhi salam were present in that house. Instructions were given to Rasulullah. And then it's Amir al-Mu'mineen's turn. Instructions given to him, first of all, is that after the Prophet, Ali, you have to be patient. A lot. He says, okay, I will be patient. That khilafah of yours will be seized away from you. You will be deprived from it. And for the sake of preventing disunity in the nation and in the ummah of Rasulullah, we want you to be patient so that disunity doesn't come. Tafriqa doesn't come in the nation, and the nation remains as the nation of Rasulullah. He says, okay, if the pleasure of Allah is in that, I will stay. I will be patient. And then the second instruction, then when it was given to Amir al-Mu'mineen, the strong existence, or an existence who is as strong as a mountain, he collapses. He faints. Now what was that? Says that after Rasulullah, Zahra will be disrespected. They will attack her. He couldn't bear to hear that. That how come the daughter of Rasulullah, the first person of Islam, and she being the first lady, how come she could be attacked immediately after Rasulullah and he has to be patient? Now, it so happens that in Medina, Rasulullah passes away. Those mala'in, they come and attack the house of Amir al-Mu'mineen. House is burnt down. And there, in that congregation that has gathered outside the house, there is a Jew, a Yahudi. He embraces, says that, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah wa ashhadu anna Muhammadan Rasulullah. People present over there says that, is this the time to embrace? Were you not present with Ali in all those battles, in all those wars? Were you not present in Khandaq? Were you not present in Khaybar? You saw all those miracles there. He says, I was present with Ali. I saw all those miracles there. But what I see now is different. Ali is Asadullah. Ali is that strong person who could do whatever he wants. Over here again, he could have done whatever he wants, but he didn't do. The picture of Ali which I see today is different to the picture what I saw then. That is what makes me embrace. That is what makes me submit. So, submission. A person has to submit. And with that submission, he can be guaranteed up to a certain extent. Among the personalities that we have who played an important role in this mission of Aba Abdullah, it's this little toddler of Aba Abdullah al-Husayn, Ruqayya bint al-Husayn. And again, it's said that the names given to the daughters of Aba Abdullah are Fatima. And then he calls her Ruqayya. As he names all of his sons Ali because of that love which he has to his father. Now, this little toddler of Aba Abdullah al-Husayn, when she is born, the mother, she dies. And it is Aba Abdullah who is the father, who is the mother for this little child. So there is that devotion, that bond between the father and the daughter. So much so that it is said that she, when she wanted to sleep, she comes and sleeps on the chest of the father. She is comforted by the father is comforted by the daughter. And she resembles her grandmother, Hazrat Zahra, alayhi salam, the most. That whenever Ahlul Bayt, they were reminded of their mother, they come and see this little toddler of Abdullah Hussein. Reporting from Sayyid Ibrahim Damishqi, among the great personalities, who passes on. Now, this incident is of the year 1380 after Hijrah, which is 51 years from today. Now, this person, Sayyid Ibrahim Damishqi, he has three daughters. And it so happens that one day, the elder daughter, she has a dream, and that is Ruqayya bintul Husayn alayhi salam. She says to the daughter, tell your father, Sayyid Ibrahim Damishqi, to inform the governor here to come and fix my grave, as there is water in this grave and it's hurting me. She comes and reveals that to the father. The father takes no notice. He says that if I come and take notice of this dream which my daughter has seen, the Sunnis present over here are going to make a mockery of my faith. The second day, the second daughter sees exactly the same thing, and she comes and says that to the father. Again, he takes no notice of that. The third day, the third daughter, the same dream, she also gives the message. Father takes no notice. The fourth day, Hazrat Ruqayya, she herself comes to the dream of the father and says that, what is this? For the past 3 days, I've been giving you the message and you have taken no notice. And she is shocked. He is shaken, comes straight to the governor and says, this is what has happened. He gives the instructions that the pious people present in Damascus, from among the Sunnis, from among the Shias, they come in clean clothes, washed, and come and they have to exhume the grave of Ruqayya bintul Husayn to fix it. And the instructions given are that when you come to the zari of Hazrat Ruqayya, the lock of that zari, to whichever hand it opens, he enters. It doesn't open to any one of them but Sayyid Ibrahim Damishqi. He comes and the lock opens. And they take the spade, they want to open the grave, it won't open. It opens with Sayyid Ibrahim Damishqi. So the grave is exhumed and they find the body that was laid there by our fourth Imam about 1400 years ago is intact, it's over there. And this Sayyid, he cries, he weeps, takes the body out of the grave, and then he says that for 3 consecutive days, he has the body of this little toddler of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein in his laps, and he weeps for 3 days. When it was time for prayers, he keeps the body down, says his prayers, comes back, and says that for these 3 days that I was holding the body, I never needed to renew my wuzu, nor did I need to eat or drink anything. Allah had gave that karamat that he was needless to all these requirements. Quran says with reference to Allah in Surah, in Ayatul Kursi, that لا تأخذه سنة ولا نوم, that Allah, he doesn't need to sleep, nor yawns, nor slumbers. Those who become a reflection of Allah, they also get a faint reflection of the existence of Allah in that aspect. There's a book called Nishani Azbi Nishanha. When the karamat of marhum Ayatullah Shaykh Hasan Ali Nukhuda Isfahani have been mentioned. It so happens that he breaks his hand, fractures it, and it's in plaster. He was in Taharat at that time. And the doctor says that this plaster has to remain for 40 days. He says to Allah that, now although he could do tayammum if required, he says that I want to be in this wuzu so long as this plaster is there. And it so happens that karamat is given to him. For 40 days he needed not to go to the toilet, not renewing the wuzu, not eating or not drinking. That is possible. When a person comes to a rank, becomes a reflection of Allah. Now these things are just woven even for kun fayakun, that you find that people, they do miraculous things, like just intend something and it happens. So people who, when they become a reflection of Allah, Allah gives and bestows to them. He says that for 3 consecutive days, he was holding the body of Ruqayya bintul Husayn and was weeping. And after the 3 days, because it took 3 days for them to make the grave, to rebuild it, she was laid to rest, And as a result of that service which he provided, and that is holding this toddler of Abu Abdullah for 3 days, a karamat was given to this person, to Sayyid Ibrahim Damishqi. And that is, whenever a person was bitten by one of these poisonous creatures and they found no cure, they come to this Sayyid, he just touches them and they get shifa. And that was given, that is, not to him only, to the generations that follow after that. Now his grandson, because he is the custodian of the Zainabiyya and the shrine of Hazrat Ruqayya, he says that that has been transferred to them as well. That is something that was given by Hazrat Ruqayya, that little toddler of Abdullah, to the grandfather, from the grandfather to his son, and from his son to his grandson. It just... So Ahlul Bayt, they are great. Now, she might be a little toddler, but with those little fingers, she can open miraculous and open, solve huge big problems that we are facing. Now, when she cried, a child, when she cries, is to be comforted. She is comforted with those whips and those lashes. And when this caravan is traveling from Karbala to Kufa, from there to Sham, and it so happens that when she is reminded of her father and she cries, instead of comforting her, she is thrown down from the camels. And on the day of Ashura, when everything has collapsed, everything has burnt down, everything has perished, Zainab, she says that I put all these kids that were present over there to sleep. And she is dead tired, exhausted. Now Zainab, who is a strong lady, when she is to offer her prayers, she couldn't do them while she's standing. She says that I put all of these kids to sleep, and then I find one of them is missing. I was just shaken, shocked, that where is... And she said, it's Ruqayya. That is the dearest child of Abu Abdullah al-Hussein. Comes out in search of her, and she finds that little child is on one of the bodies in the battlefront. She says that, Ruqayya, where are you? Whose body is that? She says, it's my father. She says, how did you recognize him? There is no head on that body, and the body is all broken. She says, I know where my father is. I know him by his fragrance. Ruqayya, in those prisons of Sham, again, when she starts crying, and she wants her father, the cry from the prisons of Sham shakes the palace of Yazid. He says, what's happening over there? What is all this crying for? And he is informed that she wants to see her father. The head of Abu Abdullah is sent to the prison and is thrown into the laps of Ruqayya. And she sees, she faints, she dies. Now the woman who washes Ruqayya, she says that, she starts beating her head. Says, who is the relative? Who is the mother of this child? Was she afflicted with a disease? Why is her skin like that? Why are all these blisters on her body? Ala la'natullah ala al-qawm al-zalimeen. Wa sayya'alamu al-lazina zalamu ayyamun qalamin yanqalibun. اللهم اغفر لنا ولوالدينا ولمن وجب له حق علينا ولمن وصانا بالدعاء ولجميع أمة محمد وآل محمد. Oh Allah, never separate us from Quran, from Ahlul Bayt. May that be in this dunya, barzakh or qiyamah, even for a moment. May Allah hasten the arrival of our Imam, and may he enlist us among his true supporters and those who seek martyrdom in his service. May Allah enlist us and our children among the best Muslims who ever existed. All those who are ill and ailing, may Allah, by these majalis, grant them cure and shifa. All those who have passed away, may Allah elevate their ranks. All those who have hopes in these majalis, a share of the reward and thawab from this majlis to be given to them. All those who have requested for dua, for them, a salawat with a few times, we'll recite the ayah. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ala Muhammad. Amma yujibu al-mudtarra idha da'ahu wa yakshifu su.
امن يجيب المضطر اذا امن يجيب المضطر اذا دعاه ويكشف السوء امن يجيب المضطر اذا دعاه امن يجيب المضطر اذا دعاه ويكشف السوء ما تنسى